morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Wednesday, March 22nd, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Uganda's parliament passes a controversial anti-homosexual law.
This House will not shy to restrict any right to the extent of the House that recognizes, protects, and safeguards the sovereignty of this country.
A youth demonstration against unemployment in Namibia turns violent. Kenyan media organizations criticize opposition leader Raila Odinga for calling on his supporters to boycott certain media organizations. Labour Party candidate Peter Obi petitions the appeals court to cancel the results of Nigeria's presidential elections. Today, Wednesday, is World Water Day.
There are still billions of people and countless institutions and businesses living without safely managed water and sanitation services. The need for action is not only urgent, it is also desperate.
And Senegal gears up for more anti-government protests. Those stories and more are coming up on Daybreak Africa. The Ugandan parliament has passed a controversial anti-homosexual law. The legislators call it landmark legislation that protects the sovereignty and integrity of the nation. The new law calls for life imprisonment for some offenses related to LGBTQ people. Reporter Mugumi Davis Vakarinji has more from Kampala, Uganda.
Speaking after an overwhelming vote in favor of the new anti-LGBTQ law, Speaker of Parliament Anita Among thanked the legislators from across the political divide for having united to protect, in two quotes, Uganda's sovereignty. Without mentioning names, she said she had received threats from those opposed to passing the new law entitled Anti-Homosexuality Bill 2023. She said the parliament had listened to divergent views, including those opposed to the law. But she says the legislation echoes the aspirations of the majority of citizens.
The norms and aspirations of people of Uganda will always remain supreme. Whatever we are doing for the people of Uganda. This House will not shy to restrict any right to the extent of the House recognizes, protects, and safeguards the sovereignty of this country, the morals of this country, the cultures, and will always legislate for our people.
Among the penalties for aggravated homosexual crimes include life imprisonment. Media houses culpable of allegedly promoting homosexual activities may lose their licenses and pay fines. One of the sponsors of the bill, parliamentarian Asuman Basalilwa, thanked the speaker for standing her ground in support of the law.
I am aware that the intimidation was not only extended to you, it came to me. But we've been able, and all of us, I am aware, being threatened with the visa restrictions, travel restrictions. These homosexuals have been jamming my phone with the nudity, profanities, and abuses, thinking that we would relent.
Parliamentarian Fox Odoi presented a minority report opposing the bill.
Today, you permitted me as a minority to have my say, and the majority had their way. That is how democracies work.
Douglas Mpuga, the leader of opposition in parliament, is calling on the president to quickly approve the bill.
The head of state, speaking in tongues the previous day, will be able this time around to speak right on this particular law. We took note of his speech in tongues, sounding scientific at some stage, and without conclusion, right on the speaker.
Government Chief Whip Hamson Obua spoke on behalf of the government.
This parliament has demonstrated clearly that the order of nature is clear, that a man goes with a woman, a he-goat goes with a she-goat, a cock goes with a hen, a bull goes with a cow.
Speaking to parliamentarians last week, President Museveni termed LGBTQ people as, in two quotes, deviants, but promised to discuss more about the issue. A similar law banning sexual relations between people of the same sex was quashed by the courts of law in 2014. Rights activists say the law will bring more stigma in a society that is deeply divided over LGBTQ rights. Gay rights activists say that same-sex relations are found in nature and is natural among people who have never felt an attraction to members of the opposite sex. They say LGBTQ people have existed throughout history, but many have tried to hide their behavior due to stigma and potential violence. And they say most gay people, like heterosexual adults, practice consensual relations and do not molest children, and their existence does not promote homosexuality. For VOA News, I am Mugume Davis Ruakarinji in Kampala, Uganda.
In Nigeria, Peter Obi, the Labour Party candidate who came third in Nigeria's February 25 presidential elections, has petitioned the appeals court to cancel the results of the presidential vote in which Bola Tinubu was declared the winner. Obi asked the court to make the Independent National Electoral Commission, INEC, hold a fresh election. Labour Party spokesperson Yunusa Tanko tells me the party filed the petition because the contest was marred by corrupt practices and did not comply with the Electoral Act.
Number one, the so-called president-elect did not actually have the prerequisite qualification to run for election based on the Constitution of the Federal Republic of Nigeria, which is one, you must submit your primary living certificate, which he did not. You can even verify that on the INEC portal as regard to what was the qualification he submitted to contest for the election. Two, he did not meet the threshold as prescribed by the Constitution of the Federal Republic of Nigeria that you must win 25% in the SCT of the Federal Republic of Nigeria. Three, that the election was marred with irregularities, subversion of votes, intimidation, and gross misconduct based on the provisions of the Electoral Act. And in that regard, we also call for the complete rerun or cancellation of the results of the election entirely.
Mr. Tinubu did not conduct the election. The Independent National Elections Commission conducted the election. So are you also going to complain or file a suit against the INEC?
Yes, they are joined as defendants on the petition that was written. Mr. Tinubu was one, and then the political party is two, including the Independent Electoral Commission.
How would you describe the performance of Mr. Obi in the presidential election itself?
It exceeded even the doubting Thomases, i.e. one, he has been able to mobilize the Nigerian youths who are completely left in hostility for a very long time. They have found favor in him to have voted for him. Secondly, for the first time in the history of Nigeria, many people who live outside this country traveled home to come and vote for Peter Obi, and they spent their own hard-earned resources. Thirdly, he was able to make sure that he led his campaign based on issue-based elections. He did not deviate from that, and that resonated with the Nigerian people. And I must also say here that his campaign resonated also with the elite, who were actually before not interested in Nigerian politics, and it has mobilized and jack up the interest of politics in Nigeria to the grassroots height. And that is the reason why the so-called allocated result that we are questioning was also giving us that actually Peter Obi won in 12 states. This is a politician who has been adjourned to only be on a Twitter space, but he has been able to galvanize this kind of a humongous support that has left them in jittery, and that was the reason why he could not publish the result that he actually scored on the INEC portal. They only had the Federal House of Representatives, the Senate, and his own result was kept in abeyance so that they could manipulate and rig the election as the case was. So therefore, Mr. Obi and Betty Baba Ahmed performed exceedingly well in the election, even though we believe if the election were counted accurately, we have won the election.
Mr. Tanko, it's a pleasure to speak with you, and thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Mr. James.
Yunusa Tanko is the spokesperson for Nigeria's Labour Party of Peter Obi. He was speaking with us from Lagos. More than 800,000 people across the world died each year from diseases directly attributed to unsafe water, inadequate sanitation, and poor hygiene practices. This, according to the United Nations, which says billions of people around the world still lack access to the commodity. And as the international community celebrates World Water Day today, Wednesday, the UN says increasing floods, unpredictable rainfall, and droughts threaten sustainable development, biodiversity, and people's access to water and sanitation. Maureen Ojiambo reports.
Water is essential for human well-being, energy and food production, health ecosystems, gender equality, and poverty reduction. But as the demands for water continue to rise, the United Nations estimates that about 4 billion people experience severe water scarcity for at least 1 month of the year. Today, the UN is holding a three-day conference in New York that will address the challenges facing people globally due to water scarcity. Lota Tatinen is the chief service of the Sustainable Development Outreach and Partnership Branch at the United Nations Department of Economic and Social Affairs.
The three-day conference will feature 6 official plenary meetings and 5 interactive dialogues that cover cross-cutting topics, including water and health, water and sustainable development, water and climate change, resilience and environment, water cooperation, and finally, water action decade.
In Africa, prolonged drought has led to a water crisis with more than 8.5 million people, including 4.2 million children, facing dire water shortages. Water scarcity is killing livestock, drying up crops, and driving families from their homes in search of the commodity. UN Water Chairperson Gilbert Hubo says countries should accelerate progress towards achieving clean water and sanitation for all by 2030.
There are still billions of people and countless institutions and businesses living without safely managed water and sanitation services. The need for action is not only urgent, it is also desperate. We have a once-in-a-generation opportunity to tackle this global water and sanitation crisis. The health, dignity, and future of individuals, families, communities, and societies are at stake.
This year, World Water Day is concentrating on accelerating change to solve a crisis that affects 1 in 4 people who lack access to safe drinking water. The Secretary General of the UN 2023 Water Conference, Lee Junhua, says member states should act quickly to help half of the population in the world's rural areas who lack clean water.
The water is not on track to meet the water-related SDGs and targets by 2030. Untreated wastewater and agricultural runoff pose threats to environmental water quality. Climate change is projected to impact available water resources and intensified water-related disasters.
In Kenya, the increasing demand for water and its growing scarcity is exacerbated by climate change, population growth, urbanization, water pollution, and poor management of water resources. Together, they have affected economic activities, food security, education, and health. According to the UN, access to safe and clean water is a basic human right. However, in the latest report on the matter by the World Meteorological Organization, water-related hazards have increased at an alarming rate. Since 2000, floods have grown by 134%, with the duration of droughts increasing by 29%. The UN emphasizes that water must be at the center of climate policies and action, since sustainable water management helps build resilience, mitigate impacts of climate change, and protect societies and ecosystems. Reporting for VOA's Daybreak Africa, I am Maureen Ojiambo in Sacramento, California.
You are listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I am James Butte in Washington. Today is Wednesday, March 22nd. For more Africa news and features, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Connect with us on all social media platforms. We are on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. News group groups in Kenya are criticizing opposition leader Raila Odinga for his comments calling for the boycott of certain media organizations in announcing the next phase of his mass protest against the Kenyan government on Tuesday. Odinga asked what he called patriotic Kenyans to boycott media houses such as Safaricom, KCB and Radio Africa because, in his words, the corporations have become the enemies of the people. He also announced that his protest will take place twice a week, Monday and Thursday. David Omwoyo is the chief executive officer of the Media Council of Kenya. He tells me that Odinga's comments threaten the safety and security of journalists while at the same time undermining democracy.
The reason why we are protesting Raila Odinga's comments about Kenyans boycotting a media house is how that could be perceived. Because if you ask a mob of rowdy rioters to boycott a certain media house and its products, we do not know how they perceive it. Some may perceive it as attack the journalists from that media house, or attack the media house itself and burn it down, or attack any car or any product you see of the same. So boycotting in a civilized way could be good, that just avoid the products of that organization. But when you just give such instructions to some reckless fellows who we have seen burning down, looting vehicles, burning vehicles, and even attempting to storm police stations, it could put individual journalists and employees of the specific media house in danger.
Does your organization have any background as to why Mr. Odinga will make such a comment?
I do not have a background why Raila Odinga did what he did. But because the newspaper, the Radio Africa newspaper, the headline was highlighting the demonstrations yesterday. But they had an editorial where they seemed to say that the demonstrations are irrelevant and just a threat to human life and destruction of property, and they should be avoided. That seems to be the reason why he took the position to attack them. It is a threat when senior leaders of the country, if they get unfavorable coverage, they then attack the media house, because then it puts so many people's lives at risk.
Aside from your criticism of Mr. Odinga's comments, what can you do as a journalist organization to protect those journalists who might be in danger because of Mr. Odinga's comments?
Truth is that our options are limited unless when we work with other agencies. But at a point when we want to really restrict ourselves to protecting journalists of the media houses, we have provided many advisories of wearing strategic and sufficient camouflage, not moving around with branded cars and all that, which is the best we can do in our context of protecting the rights of journalists at work and then the individual media house. But there isn't much we can do, but unless then we get a direct attack on the employees of the media house, then we can move to court and demand that Mr. Odinga be held responsible for making remarks which then directly led to direct harm of these media houses. Because then we have also, from a point, we respect his right to freedom of expression and to express his opinion, that's okay. But if then his words are perceived wrongly by his supporters and they cause harm to the journalists, that's when then we can move. Otherwise, we cannot act on perceived actions until the actions take place. But the reason for our protest note was that to let him know that his actions can really affect innocent journalists.
David Omwoyo is the chief executive officer of the Media Council of Kenya. He was speaking with us from Nairobi. Hundreds of Namibian youth on Tuesday gathered in the capital Windhoek and other towns to demonstrate against a 46% unemployment rate, according to the latest statistics from the National Labor Force Survey. Vitalio Angula reports from Windhoek, Namibia.
What was supposed to be a peaceful demonstration against youth unemployment took a violent turn when police instructed the protesters to disperse within 5 minutes because they had not acquired official authorization for their action. Namibia observes Independence Day on the 21st of March, which is a public holiday, and protest leader Michael Amushelelo was asked to postpone the demonstration. One of the protesters, Esther Nakale, explains what happened.
Actually, they were chasing us with no mercy, and they had rubber bullets, they had zamboks to whip us, and we had to run to save our lives. But they keep on chasing us, and there was nothing else to do.
Michael Amushelelo is a political commissar of the Namibia Economic Freedom Fighters, the Namibian branch of South Africa's Julius Malema-led Economic Freedom Fighters. Amushelelo was arrested on Tuesday alongside political activist Dimbulukeni Nyoma and opposition parliamentarian Ina Hengari for staging a demonstration without police approval. South Africa's economic freedom fighters on Monday took to the streets in what they called the national shutdown to protest against a failing economy, unemployment, crime and load shedding or power rationing. Police spokesperson for the Commerce Region, Silas Shipandeni, confirmed the arrest of Amshilelo and two others.
What I can tell the public is that he is arrested, and among his other charges that he's arrested for, one of them is that it's a violation of a court order, and also on top of that, there is also a charge of inciting violence or kind of instigating to create public nuisance in the form of a public gathering, of which to us also now in violation of the court order that we are talking about.
Secretary General of the Official Opposition, the People's Democratic Movement, PDM, Manuel Garingombe, told VOA that the police should have allowed the youth to hold a demonstration because there was no threat of violence from the protesters.
It's very, very important for all of us to understand that there are fundamental freedoms and rights in the Republic of Namibia. Rights to association, freedom of speech, also the right to demonstrate, a right to air your views. These are basic human rights and freedoms.
Namibia, with an estimated population of 2.3 million, has one of the highest unemployment rates in Africa. Although it is regarded as an upper middle income country, most wealth is concentrated within a tiny section of society. Namibia has the world's third highest level of income inequality, according to World Bank data. And disenfranchised youth are faced with the triple burden of poverty, unemployment, and inequality. This is Amushelelo's sixth arrest in the last 3 months. This, as his brand of politics, which centers on labor matters, has gathered momentum, with many young people relying on him to address their concerns. Vitalio Angula for VOA News, Windhoek, Namibia.
Protests rocked Senegal last week after some opposition members took to the streets and police responded, sometimes with violence. Ousmane Diallo is a spokesperson for Amnesty International. He talks to Ricky Stryak about some of the human rights violations that were reported and continued concerns as opposition leader Ousmane Sonko calls for more protests this week.
So this is a situation that is very similar to the one that we encountered in March 2021. And that led to 5 days of protest in Senegal. And the situation is pretty similar because following the arrest of Ousmane Sonko, we saw clashes between protesters and security officers, but also with armored thugs hired by politicians. And at the end of the day, we had counted three people that were killed during the clashes. And yesterday, during the protest in Binjona, where students were calling for the liberation of their fellow students that were arrested, one person, a 22-year-old man, was killed when security forces fired live ammunition at him. And beyond those cases of violence and death, there have been several arrests.
You know, what do you guys think about the continued call for protests? Are there any kind of reactions being put in place by the government or by the armed forces or the police or gendarmes to make sure the violence kind of decreases?
So we are not aware of any disposition or plan by the security forces to protect protests in Senegal, as the opposition calls for resistance and continued protest in order to pressure the government. But what we have seen is a heavy continued deployment of gendarmes and police officers in the main arteries and roundabouts in Dakar, especially next to the Kergongi neighborhood, which is the residence of President Ousmane Sonko. 100 protesters have been arrested and remanded before the prosecutor by the gendarmerie, by the police, and by other security outfits.
The places where these protests tend to happen are often French-owned grocery chains. Why is that?
I mean, that is something that that is very obvious now, because even when protests are planned, what we see is that many schools tell parents not to bring their children to school because of the security risk with the planned protest and the potential clashes. Also, what we see is that protests have been used as an opportunity to loot retail stores, private businesses.
That was Ousmane Diallo, a senior researcher at Amnesty International. He was speaking to Ricky Stryak from Dakar, Senegal. And that's it for this Wednesday, March 22nd edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for coming aboard with us this morning. For more Africa news and features, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Connect with us on all social media platforms. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, I am James Barton in Washington, wishing that you will have a wonderful